Steven.
James Herbert, welcome back to the podcast. How are you? How is America doing?
Just great. Like, businesses are open. Schools are going to open. There's really nothing to see here. Society is just fine.
Okay. It's like that photo of, like, the society in the future where everything is great. Is that America right now?
Yeah. It's definitely not the photo with the dog and the fire all around him. It's not that.
What have you enjoyed about the NBA bubble so far?
I enjoy that I'm not there. It seems like all reporters are doing, at least Ben Golliver and Mark Stein, are just like pacing back and forth in their room over and over again to avoid kind of descending into insanity. Or maybe they are descending into insanity while that's happening. But I think they're out of the bubble now, right? I think it's later today. They get out if they haven't already. So, I mean, out of the quarantine, they're still in the bubble, obviously. I'm thankful to have like a little more freedom. But I guess the, like, some of the inside the bubble, like just the like dumb Instagram stuff, like that's been kind of fun.
Yeah. Those have gotten old after like 4 days though.
Like, I guess that's why I didn't sound like super excited about it, even though I was saying it was fun. Like, some of them are funny, but I don't know. I'm still kind of like, I don't have my normal level of excitement, to say the least, about like basketball coming back.
Well, you have 11 days left until the season actually starts.
Are you psyched? Are you pumped?
Yeah, I'm pumped that like half the team are missing like half of their players.
Like, how many Denver Nuggets could you name right now?
Oh man, we're doing this at the start and not the end. Well, I didn't know Troy Daniels wasn't a Laker anymore until he went viral with his food photo. So now I know he's on the Denver Nuggets because I follow him on Instagram now.
You learned that.
Basically, if you were the first person
playing right now,
who is who?
Bol Bol, so Manute Bol's son. He's, first of all, he's on the Nuggets, and he's like 7'2". But they've been needing to play him at small forward during their like practices because they don't have people.
Yeah, didn't one of their players say that there's only like 10 guys there? I guess this was before like Jokic showed up.
Yeah, but even with Jokic, there's still only about 10 guys.
Yeah, it's weird because I think you can tell after a while who's there or not. Everybody's talking about how Bam isn't there for the Heat, right?
Yeah, but you can do this. I mean, people were doing this with the Rockets. It's very easy to go through the Nuggets like social media because they post a ton of videos and photos and just go by process of elimination. Like, oh, I haven't seen Gary Harris yet. I haven't seen Monte Morris. And I mean, some of those have actually been reported. But there are like six guys, I think, with the Nuggets who are not in Orlando. And it's getting a little weird.
Yeah, well, I guess it's a whole privacy thing. But then at the same time, it just invites people to speculate. Like, people were speculating about Kyle Lowry for a bit because he just wasn't in the social content.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he secretly showed up late. I don't know. I don't actually think that was the case. But of course people are going to speculate. And that it's so weird because, like, all of these coaches are forced to do these, like, Zoom interviews, like, pretty much every day. And they're not supposed to say, like, if somebody is not there, even if it's not because of coronavirus, but if somebody's not there, it's supposed to be like they're just kind of being silent, but they'll answer questions about anyone who is there. So there's not really much mystery about it. It's just, you do this awkward dance where it's like, oh, can I have an update on Markieff Morris? Like, oh, I'm not willing to comment on him at this time. Like, and it's just like, all right, man, like, cool. Like, it's at a certain point, it's like, what are we even doing here?
Yeah, and there's gambling implications too, because I know you love to gamble on the NBA.
Yeah, I'm a huge gambling expert. No, I mean, Tom Haberstroh wrote a good story about that, and it is interesting from the perspective of how can the NBA on the one hand be sort of talking about how they want to get some of this gambling money in the next few years and how this is going to be a big thing, but then something like this, which has like very clear gambling implications, they're just like, yeah, we're not going to make any effort to be transparent about it whatsoever. And I realize people keep saying like HIPAA violation. It's like, I don't know that is really the case when it comes to like player availability. Like people, like NBA teams release information about guys' injuries and their surgeries and when they're sick all the time. Sometimes they're a little bit vague about it, but oftentimes it's like very specific. It's just they collectively decided going into this that they would just not talk about it, and it would be up to the individual player whether or not they were going to make an announcement of any kind. And I get that. I don't gamble, so I don't personally really care. It's just very weird.
Yeah, I read that story too, and someone in there, I think it was one of the people working at the sports books, was like, you know, having COVID should be the same as like having a knee injury. Like it should just be disclosed, which I'm not sure I agree with.
I get it. If you run a sports book, you would think that, but I don't know. Like it's a deadly pandemic. This is a serious thing. And I don't really know what the right answers are here. Like I'm not about to like get on my high horse for the betting community, but I will acknowledge that it is weird that if you wanted to, like, I know, like, part of Haberstroh's story, like, if you wanted to place a bet on the Rockets and Harden and Westbrook were not there, like, you just could not do it. It was just kind of off the board. And it's a strange situation with all of this stuff. But it also encourages kind of weird, awkward speculation where people are kind of joking about James Harden having the virus and, like, speculating about like, oh, he like had a house party and he obviously caught it there and spread it to a bunch of other people. What a jerk. And then a couple of days later, he shows up in the bubble and it's like, oh, so did he have it? Did he not? Why wasn't he there? And then we just don't find out what happened ever.
Yeah. And then he wears a Blue Lives Matter face mask.
Wait, what? No. Yeah. That. Yeah, no, that was another little wrinkle.
Honestly, the Rockets are so exhausting, man.
Just there's always something.
Tillman, Fertitta, Russell Westbrook is okay. I think he's just exhausting for opponents.
I hope he's okay right now.
Yeah, or Russell Westbrook conversations are just exhausting. James Harden is exhausting. It's just hilarious whenever people ask Harden to like make any kind of political statement. Like I remember when they asked him about like Daryl Morey's Hong Kong tweet earlier this year, and he's just like, "I love my fans in China."
Well, I mean, that political statement could have cost him money, so he wasn't going to make it. I believe he did go to a protest, didn't he?
I want to say that he did, but yeah, I don't know.
And I saw he made a comment about BLM recently. I think in the same interview where he didn't really apologize for the Blue Lives mask thing, but like basically said he didn't know what it meant. It was very ambiguous. It was like, it left me wanting like the full story about like, how did he get this mask? Like who thought this was a good idea? Who took the photo? Who posted it? Like what the hell is going on here? But again, like, I don't think we're ever going to find out this information.
No, I'm sure it was a dumb mistake, but I would have loved to hear the story. At least his friend Young Thug came and defended him and just
said, yeah, he doesn't have the internet.
He doesn't have the internet. Yo, shout out to Young Thug, man. You need a friend like that, especially when you wear a Blue Lives Matter mask in this climate. Anyways, speaking of having the internet, how are you enjoying Stan Van Gundy's Twitter account?
I mean, he came in hot. I don't know why he didn't do this earlier. He clearly has been like, he's just had a lot kind of bottled up inside and now he's getting it all out. I frankly love it. I think there were like one or two tweets where I wasn't fully all in, but like for the most part, I mean, the man seems to be on the right side of everything, and he's going at the owner of the team that he used to coach, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, he went at the DeVos family, who, you know, as people know, didn't they make their fortune basically by running scams, like MLMs, multi-level marketing schemes?
Yeah, there's that, and then there's just them funding every initiative that the players in the NBA are like sort of reacting to right now. I mean, you can just it is not hard to look at that family's history and be just extremely upset with everything that's going on and wonder how, you know, players could feel okay in this climate kind of having DeVos as an owner. Like it's righteous of Van Gundy to be like going at DeVos, I think, but it's also kind of telling that it has not really been a subject of conversation for a long time, and we've all just kind of accepted it. It's weird. Like, I mean, I'm usually not the person to like jump aboard the like, yay, the NBA is such like a progressive league thing, because like I just sort of don't think it is. I think it only looks good in comparison to other sports leagues, of course. But I mean, we're still talking about a league in which, I mean, just think about this bubble scenario. Like you have like a 75% black league, and they're playing during a pandemic and putting their bodies at risk while these owners are getting half of the money and taking none of the risk. And it's just like, this is how it works. And like some of like Silver's public comments recently have been kind of wishy-washy, like even on like Kaepernick stuff, which we thought like the NBA had kind of distanced themselves from the NFL on these issues. But like, but yeah, like it's, I normally don't, like for that reason, I normally don't want to get all excited about like, oh, like Greg Popovich like did it again. Like, oh, Steve Kerr is like a political hero or whatever. But like the Van Gundy stuff is like genuinely fun. Like I like following this account.
Yeah, I'm tired of people always doing that Pop Kerr 2020 thing. I feel like people are just living in a fantasy when they do that. Anyways, also want to talk about your bubble tea tweet, which you sent since the last time we talked on this podcast. What was the exact tweet? NBA gossip will now be known as bubble tea.
Yeah, I think I just said NBA gossip is now called bubble tea. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know, I was walking. I was on one of my walks, you know, when I pulled out my phone and saw that tweet. And honestly, I almost didn't retweet it because, you know, I rarely get jealous of other people's tweets, but I was really jealous of that one. So I think I walked like two blocks and was just like talking to myself, just like in anger that I didn't think of that. And then I finally just, you know, hesitantly, I finally pressed the retweet for you.
Thank you. I mean, I'm honored to hear that. The idea came to me while I was on a walk as well, I'll have you know, but I didn't tweet it until I got home.
And I also was like, I know James is probably so proud of this tweet, and I'm just so upset right now.
I don't know about so proud. I mean, it's a stupid tweet, but it went pretty viral. I don't know.
No, it was perfect. And you know, I hate when I see a perfect tweet. That's not mine, but I'm still working on that personally. Just getting over those feelings of jealousy in general.
Listen, life is just a quest for the perfect tweet. That's all we're doing here.
Wow, you sound like Giannis saying, "The only place where what is it? Success comes before work is in the dictionary."
Yeah, Giannis definitely came up with that. He's the first person I've ever seen.
He's probably not even the first Antetokounmpo to post that. Anyways, anything else about the NBA bubble before we flash back 5 months to the All-Star game?
I don't know. I guess we're going to be having these scrimmage games soon. So we'll have basketball to watch. They're going to be like 10-minute quarters, and I don't know who's going to be playing in them or what the rotations are going to look like, but it's going to be pretty weird.
Your level of excitement is just, you know,
bursting
through the microphone right now, bro.
I should, like, I realize, like, I don't know. Like, when we're actually talking about basketball, like we did on the last podcast, like, I can get into it. Like, I've done a lot of, like, stories about, like, analysis. Like, what, like, I'm capable of getting in that mindset where I'm, like, thinking about matchups and, like, who can do what and getting excited. But, like, I have to get there. If we're just talking generally about what's happening, like, I'm sorry. This is kind of like, this is what it is.
Oh, it's messed up, man. Especially, you know, where they're playing and all that stuff. We've talked about that stuff. I don't even think the basketball, I think there will be obviously like an initial excitement, you know, when the Jazz tip off against, you know, the Pelicans without Zion again, probably because he had to leave, right? He had a family emergency.
He had to leave.
Now.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing, too, because weird. Now, yeah, that's what I was going to say, because now there's different rules, I think, depending on how long he's gone, right? And then he has to quarantine when he comes back.
Well, it depends. So the NBA offered a kind of statement to Henry Abbott on this that was very vague, that said, essentially, it's too early to say exactly how long he'll be out, and once he's back, we'll figure it out according to our rules. If you look at the rules, like, if you are tested every single day while you're away, then I believe it's like a 10-day quarantine. If you're not, then it's 10 to 14 days. And at that point, it's not looking good for him. But I guess the other variable is, like, is he going to come back to the bubble tomorrow? Is he going to come back in the coming days? Like, I don't know. It feels like, honestly, it feels kind of dirty even speculating about this, because it's a family issue, right? And we don't know what that is. And I think my main thing is, like, I would just kind of like to know what, if the NBA is going to enforce this any differently because it's Zion. like they have him playing the first game of the restart for a reason, just like, you know, he was supposed to be involved in the first game of the regular season and he missed that one. And it's especially awkward because who knows if we'd even have 22 teams here if the Pelicans didn't happen to be in ninth place at the time. Like, it's very weird.
No, it is very weird. And, like, yeah, like, you know, obviously him coming back and, you know, whether the Pelicans make the playoffs or the play-in game is just, like, absolutely pointless, you know, since he's dealing with a family emergency. But it's like, yeah, it's we're like 11 days, like I said, from the first game. So he's probably, unless he comes back like today, he's going to miss, you know, some of those early games. But again, none of this matters. And it's interesting because, like, a lot of, I think there's at least one guy, I forgot the name of the player now, but he has already said that, you know, when his wife gives birth, he's going to leave in a couple weeks. So, like, when these guys leave for that.
There are a couple people who said that. I think, like, Gordon Hayward said that. And who else? There was another player that said that too, and I'm blanking, but
yeah,
it's,
I feel
more
like
than one for sure.
He's either on the, I think it's Dennis Schroeder, I want to say.
Yes, yes, that's it. Yeah, Schroeder.
Yeah, because I did hear that on one of the podcasts. And, like, so what happens? Because, like, he'll probably be leaving towards the end of the regular season. And I guess if he has to quarantine, you know, 10 to 14 days, which is the rule, right? Or at least the baseline rule of what the NBA is making up, then he's gonna miss the first round of the playoffs then?
Yeah. Also, is he just going literally to, like, be in the delivery room and then get back on a plane? Like, or is he staying home for a few days with his wife? Like, I don't know the answers to these questions. I do know that 14 days is about as long as a playoff series is going to be now. Because you're going to be playing every other day. So it's just going to be different. And I think it's the kind of thing where that could be one reason somebody leaves. You could also see guys on crappy teams, like, they lose a couple of games. It's just like, peace, I'm done here. Like, oh, by the way, I have an injury. I'm not sure everybody who goes in is just going to be there nonstop until their team is eliminated.
Yeah, and you know, all of this stuff, it's like, the more we talk about it, the more the basketball just kind of doesn't matter. And I know the whole thing too, you know, with bringing 22 teams besides the money, well, it is pretty much just for the money, but they do want some kind of integrity to this whole tournament. And I feel like you're just not going to have that level of integrity that maybe some people want just because of everything that's happening.
It's possible. I think we'll have to wait and see there. Cause like, let's see how wacky this gets. Let's see if they can maintain a bubble and that there's not an outbreak, which like, I really, really hope that they do this right. They continue to. It seems like, honestly, the protocols have been enforced really well. Like, it is obviously really funny, like, Rashawn Holmes going to get a delivery and then having to quarantine. It is extremely funny, Bruno leaving his hotel room during the initial quarantine and not knowing that he couldn't, and then having to stay in his room for 10 more days. Like, I mean, it sucks, but it's hilarious objectively. But also, I think the fact that we're hearing about this, the fact that these incidents are not being swept under the rug, the fact that somebody called the hotline to say Dwight Howard isn't wearing a mask and he talked about it, like, kind of means the system's working at this point, right? Like, I think it's going well. It's just a question of like, will it still be going well in 10 days? Will it still be going well in a month? What happens when people are getting super stir crazy in Orlando, and can they keep this thing together? And like, whether or not we'll look at this as if, you know, the title means something, and whether we'll see the playoffs as having integrity, I just don't think we can know that yet. I don't think that Boston losing Gordon Hayward for a series necessarily means we're going to look at the Eastern Conference playoffs and be like, oh, like, this isn't representative of what really happened. But if there are a bunch of upsets, if a bunch of teams are missing a bunch of guys, and we're looking at these like super depleted rosters, and we're seeing like would-be contenders playing these guys from the G League in their playoff rotation because those are the players that they're allowed to call up as replacement players now, then yeah, like, obviously people are going to say, oh, there's an asterisk on this, and like, oh, I don't know if I'm actually interested in this. This is like, this is not normal, and maybe this shouldn't have happened, and blah, blah, blah. Like, there are numerous ways this can go wrong, but since it's so unprecedented, like, I don't know. If we end up with Clippers, Lakers in the conference finals, and one of those teams against the Bucks in the finals, then I don't think anybody's going to be like, oh, asterisk this season, if the rosters are like pretty much what they are now.
No, if it gets to that point, though, I'll definitely be like, they should have just invited four teams.
Yeah. Which honestly, but think about it in March and April when we were talking about things the NBA could do, and Adam Silver was talking about maybe we'll do something for charity. Like, that sounds like crazy now because there are 22 teams in Orlando and they're preparing to sort of finish out the regular season and do like a pretty normal version of the playoffs. But all of that was on the table. There was nobody saying at the outset, they have to try to make this as close to the regular season and the normal format as possible. The whole conversation was, this is an opportunity. Let's get weird. Think outside the box. Like, everything is on the table, blah, blah, blah. And like, that's just not the way it went, but it could have. It absolutely could have. They could have done something like the basketball tournament just happened. I'm sure you watched all of it, Alex.
Shout outs to Travis Diener.
Yeah. Diener for the win. That was a genuinely good game, that final game, which I'm sure you could tell me all about it.
Stop attacking me for not watching the basketball tournament.
Listen, it was good. They pulled it off in 10 days. That's like a much less ambitious thing to do. It took a lot of planning. They have far fewer resources than the NBA. It was impressive, and I thought it looked really good on TV.
And their bubble was fine? Like, there was no issues?
Well, there were issues, but they had contingencies. Like, if one person tested positive on the team, the whole team was out.
Which is really technically what the NBA should do, but of course they won't.
Well, it's easy to say what they should do, but I think that's specifically what you have to do if it's a 10-day thing, because you can't just quarantine someone because then the tournament's over, right? Like, the NBA, by doing this over a series of months. You can have somebody be out for 2 weeks and come back in, and like that is theoretically okay, right? So I get it. It's just like we have to be honest about how challenging this is and how ambitious this is and how this was not the only option. They could have done something on a much smaller scale if they wanted to.
Yeah, no, I've gone from, you know, they should have brought 22 to 16 to 8, and now I think I'm at 4. Every time I see a photo of, like, the Phoenix Suns practicing, I just crack up because I keep forgetting that they're there.
Like, how could you forget about Cameron Payne?
Yeah, not after I talked to you last time. I'm really excited about the who he play for later. I feel like I'm ready, which means I'm going to go 0 for 9. All right, so All-Star Weekend. Can you believe it was only 5 months ago?
I mean, I can believe it, but it's weird how much I'd forgotten when I went back and looked at it. Like, I wrote a story about Kyle Lowry that night. I remembered writing it, but I was watching. I was like, oh my God, he took a charge on LeBron and Kawhi. They didn't call the one on LeBron, but like, I completely blanked on, I knew he took charges. That was like why I wrote about him. But I completely blanked on who they were against. There were a lot of moments that I forgot. I remembered the intros, which I know we're going to talk about, as being like really long, but it was more that like the entire thing with all the musical performances and everything, it just took forever for the game to start. When I actually rewatched it, like I couldn't believe just how long Common was on the stage for. Like, it was interminable.
Yeah, because Common had to do not just the player intros, but he did this whole like spoken word rap just about the history of basketball in Chicago, which I thought was like pretty strong. And yeah, no, going back and just watching it, I mean, we were both in the arena. I know you were busy running around during the game. And, you know, I was doing, I don't know what. No, I was doing social. Did you watch the whole game? Did you get a chance to watch the whole game when you were at the arena on that Sunday?
Yeah, I watched the whole game. The Saturday, I missed some stuff. And actually, Saturday, I didn't really miss stuff. I was just running around a little bit. Friday, I missed some stuff during the rookie game. But I don't know if like most people actually physically sitting there watching the rookie game or paying that much attention to what is going on. But yeah, no, I mean, the game itself was awesome. Like the fourth quarter is really what was awesome. But I mean, it was decently competitive before that too. And my main recollection was just like, this sounds like stupid and corny, but like I felt genuinely lucky to be there. Cause like, honestly, like covering All-Star for a lot of reasons kind of sucks. Like it is fun to see everybody there, but in terms of like media access to the actual All-Stars, like it's terrible. And
covering All-Star is like pointless. People, reporters in the bubble probably have more access right now than we do at All-Star.
Right. But when I was watching that game, I was just like, oh my, like this is actually good. It's never good. like this rules. So like, yeah, I was actually like, I was definitely paying attention to what was happening. It was nice also to watch it without the commentary. Cause when I went back and watched it, it's like the very same thing that I'm doing right now, talking about how good it was. When that's all the announcers are saying, and it just feels like they're constantly selling what is happening, when that is annoying.
Yeah, no, the fourth quarter was incredible. You know, and obviously being in the building, I think I had the same feelings as you, man. Just you were watching something, maybe historic is too strong, but just like something really cool happening, especially with the Elam ending. And obviously, like, you just don't see that kind of competitiveness at All-Star games. Like, you'll see it at the end of games, but you know, this one was like, and we'll get into it, but I'm surprised either LeBron or Chris Paul didn't get a technical foul because they were going after the refs really hard.
Yeah, they were going after the refs. Like Lowry was pissing everyone off and like flopping, like offensive flopping too, not just defensive, and getting some calls because of it. And it was genuinely like really competitive. Like the guys cared. Like teams, I mean, the coaches were using their challenges. Like Team Giannis played a zone defense. Like it was real basketball. And I went back and like read the story I wrote, and there's all these quotes from people saying it was like a playoff atmosphere. Like, when the hell was the last time that happened? Like, that's ridiculous. Like, this is typically a complete exhibition, like sort of what you'd see at a charity game. And this was like somewhat competitive at the beginning, got better in the second half. And in the fourth quarter, it was like phenomenal. There was a stat on the screen when I just rewatched the fourth quarter now that was like dunks in the first three quarters, 41 dunks in the fourth, one. And like that, I love dunks, but I also like seeing like the literal best players on the planet playing actual defense against each other and trying. And that was cool.
Yeah. So we'll get to that. First, Chicago. So I haven't been to Chicago, until I went that weekend, since I was like a kid, because I have an uncle. Yeah. So I have an uncle that lives there. So I do remember visiting as a family, but you know, we were, I think, in the suburbs and we never really did anything. So, you know, I got to do the things that you do in Chicago, you know, visit the Bean and, you know, try a deep dish pizza. So I didn't have a great experience having deep dish.
People in Chicago are probably so mad that you're just like, all there is to do in Chicago is go to the fucking Bean and eat deep dish. Like,
listen, I'm obviously being sarcastic and being a tourist, but also that is what I did. Listen, I was working that weekend, only had, you know, so few hours to actually
how many, you know, deep visit dishes things. Did you eat?
Just once. I just tried it once. That's the other thing with All Star, is like you don't get access, but then there's all these things that you can go to that you get nothing out of. So where do you stand on deep dish? Because that was my first time trying it.
All right. So I'm just going to say out front, like my experience with deep dish is probably not the best or most authentic, or like how, like probably not fair to judge it completely off of this. Like the first time I had it was like when I was passing through O'Hare on a connecting flight and I got deep dish from the airport, and that was fine, I guess, but it wasn't any different than like the quality you would get of a normal like airport pizza, I would say. And then this past time at All Star, the only time I actually spent time in the city, I was at this ping pong event with the Basketball Without Borders kids, which I'm not even going to explain why I was there. But they had a bunch of pizzas just stacked there for the kids to eat. And I had a couple of slices there, and it was just like, it was really, really heavy. And the first few bites were good. And then I was just like, I don't know that I'm having fun with this. So, yeah, like I can't say I'm a convert, but the next time I go to Chicago, I would like to look up where you're actually supposed to go and go there and try it. But I will be a little bit apprehensive about it. Like, it's just, I'm not opposed to, I don't only eat like thin crust pizza or anything like that. I'm cool with trying different kinds, but the experience that I've had so far, it was not love at first bite. I'll put it that way.
Wow. Another viral tweet. I went to Giordano's, which I think I want to say is like a chain that is, you know, a franchise chain that's around the city. I went to the one around Wrigley Field because that's where our team was staying. And I think I had the same experience as you in that it was really cool as like a novelty to try out at the start. But then, you know, like about 5 minutes in, it just like became uncomfortable. And I hate like eating when it's not like fun. Like, you know, eating should just never be painful. But yeah, I don't know. Now that I've thought about it more, because like we had it early in the day and then we had to walk around the city and I was very uncomfortable. And I don't know. Now that I look back at it, I kind of want to try it again because I feel like I was just being a little excessive and I had too much.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure you were like, I need to do this right. I'm going to eat this whole freaking thing. And it was probably very misguided.
I hated it at the time.
I remember you saying to me at the arena, I remember you telling me about this and telling me, you refresh my memory. How much did you eat? Because I remember being like, why did you do that?
Yeah, I think I had at least, like, I guess four, quote-unquote, slices.
That sounds excessive, because, like, one slice is kind of like four slices.
Yeah, so you're saying I had 16 slices?
Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, that math sounds right to me.
Yeah, no, I was definitely excessive. And I mean, that's just part of my personality. So I do think after some self-reflection that it's probably me and it's not the pizza. And, you know, I would try it again. I would try it again under like better circumstances.
Where it could I don't partially have to walk be the pizza, though. Like, I'm open to trying it again, but in no way do I think, like, the possibility of me coming out and being like, oh, this is the best, like, fuck New York pizza, like, this is my thing now, like, that, like, there's absolutely no way that's gonna happen.
Yeah, also, like, I don't know if you're a big, like, pizza snob, but I just feel like you don't have to, like, pick one or the other. You can love all of them.
Well, yeah. I don't think I'm a pizza snob. Like, I like Domino's and stuff.
That's even a bigger problem than being a pizza snob. I think Domino's pizza is so disgusting. Their pastas are good, though. Yeah.
Wait, what? You're out here standing for Domino's pasta?
Yeah, just to be clear, these are the things that I stand. Domino's pasta. I've established on this podcast that I'm a huge Swiss Chalet fan.
I like Swiss Chalet.
And if Subway hits me with these 2-for-1 foot-long subs coupons, I'll be right there.
I don't think I've had Subway since I moved to New York, but I did used to have it a lot when I was in Toronto. I don't know what that says.
I don't actively seek out Subway, but, you know, if you're going
to offer me... They're everywhere.
Yeah, but if you're going to offer me 2 foot-longs for $10, like, sure, I'll have that.
That's a really good deal.
Yeah, Swiss Chalet is a really it's a really polarizing thing. Like, people really hate it or they really love it. I never knew this.
I mean, this is the first I'm hearing that. I thought it was just kind of a beloved Canadian institution. I don't know.
Yeah, I call it white comfort food.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
Yeah, people think the chicken is too dry or they think the sauce is like 90% water.
Huh. Yeah, no, I don't know. I liked it. But... No, but like, okay, I'll put it this way. Like, I love Detroit style pizza. I didn't even know it was a thing until a few years ago. There's this awesome place here called Emmy Squared, where I haven't been in a little bit, but like Becca and I will go there for like special occasions and shit. And like, it's really nice. And it is sort of deep dish. Like, that's what Detroit style pizza is, but it's not as crazy and heavy as Chicago deep dish. Like, Chicago deep dish is a different level, and I'm sure there are good versions of it. Next time I'm in Chicago, I'll have it. I don't think it's gonna affect me in a way that Detroit style pizza has.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. I think you mentioned this already, but with the deep dish, it's just like, if you're gonna serve it, I feel like you should just serve like one slice. I guess I realize this doesn't make sense for the kitchen, but like it's just, you can't eat a lot of it. Like, you just can't.
Or you can, and then you could wander around Chicago and feel like a piece of garbage like you did.
Honestly, I felt terrible. And, you know, I had no one to blame but myself. Like, nobody asked me to eat the equivalent of 16 slices.
Oh, even just hearing that number makes me feel weird. I don't like
the one thing I didn't try was the Chicago-style hot dog, which I didn't realize was, like, a thing until after I left.
You didn't know it was a thing?
No, I had no idea.
I feel like that's like a standard if you go to any like fancy hot dog place, like one of the options will be Chicago style. No? I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like I've never seen that. Maybe they don't offer it a lot here in Canada and I just don't notice it.
You should go to that. Do they still have that place on Queen Fancy Franks or did that close?
I feel like that's still around.
I'm sure they have it there.
Yeah, or Worst.
Ooh, yeah. I like that place.
Yeah, it's a little expensive. Wow, just really rebranding as a food podcast. I'm on the Chicago-style hot dog wiki page right now. So it's topped with yellow mustard, chopped white onions, relish, dill pickle, tomato slices. I mean, this is outside of the tomato slices. This is how I do my hot dogs anyways.
The tomato slices are the only part about that that I like.
Yeah, that's the only like unique part about it, because if I get a hot dog on the street, that's what I'm putting on my hot dog anyways. A number of Chicago hot dog vendors do not offer ketchup as a condiment. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think that's like the thing, which I don't want a hot dog without ketchup. So I just fundamentally don't jibe with Chicago hot dogs. But it sounds like you are a Chicago hot dog eater at heart without even knowing it.
Yeah. And, you know, those are the three things that you should do when you go to Chicago. Take a photo at the Bean, get a Chicago style hot dog, and then have deep dish. Maybe not in that order.
And don't forget the Jordan statue.
Oh, yeah, the Jordan statue. Yes, I have 19 photos of the Jordan statue on my phone that I look at every day. And the only good thing about All-Star is always, if you're still around on the Monday after the game, that's when they put everything on like 50% discount at the stores, because they have to get rid of the All-Star merch. So, you know, when there are fans allowed again, when the All-Star game is in like Utah in 2 years, I'll make sure you hit that up. Make sure you stay one extra day in Utah.
I got an All-Star beanie, like a tie-dye beanie lying around here somewhere.
Oh, so now that you mention it, I actually bought an NBA All-Star weekend. Or
should I say, this is a Canadian pie. I should have said toque. Damn it.
Yeah. Do you remember we had this entire conversation on Media Row once?
About toque beanie versus toque? Beanie?
Yes.
We have such interesting conversations.
No, you don't understand. This was like for 2 hours because I just couldn't believe that toque was a Canadian term. Somehow I've lived in this country for like 30 years.
Did we have this conversation in Canada or here?
It was in Toronto because I think you were wearing a beanie / toque.
Okay.
And then that you called it
I'm the beanie. One clown that would like wear that inside at a game. So
I am the other clown that would do that. So I'm right here with you. So actually, you were talking about buying stuff. I did get a pin, like a commemorative pin, and the pin is a Chicago style hot dog. So I did have a Chicago style hot dog, technically. So everything's off my checklist. I never have to go to Chicago again.
Congratulations.
What else do you remember before we get to the game, and specifically the fourth quarter, because that's all I watched. You know me. What else do you remember about just All-Star Weekend in terms of the events and the game?
Do you want, like, the honest answer is I feel bad because most of what I remember is running around to various Basketball Without Borders events for a story that has still yet to be published.
Yeah, when is that? I was actually really excited about that story. And I texted you about it a few weeks ago because I wanted to make sure I didn't miss it.
Yeah. No, you didn't miss it. It's going to be in a somewhat different form than was originally intended because of the pandemic. So there's more work to be done on that front, but it will eventually be revived. But yeah, I mean, it was actually like it was a different way to spend my All-Star weekend because I was in this gym for what is like essentially a scouting event the entire time, and a lot of those kids are really good. And we'll see them in the NBA in a couple of years. And, you know, there were players that came in and made appearances and were like coaching, and like some like current NBA coaches that were running the camp there. And it was a different side of the weekend. And like, honestly, that's kind of weirdly the place to be. Like, it's where like a lot of executives are. It's like doing actual work and chit chatting and all that stuff. So like, that was cool for me. It was just like that made my All-Star weekend pretty different than when I've covered it in the past, because I was just there for hours every day. So I didn't get to explore the city. I didn't get to go to a whole bunch of restaurants. I went out a couple of times for meals, but mostly with like coworkers and stuff. Like, so it was different, but like that is honestly, like, if you go through my phone, there's just like hundreds and hundreds of pictures of this gym where the Basketball Without Borders camp was happening.
Yeah, and you know, I was gonna say that's honestly a good use of, you know, the access and time.
Yeah, if only I could turn it into a story, but I'm working on it.
Well, you couldn't have predicted that a pandemic was coming. Actually, maybe we could have. It was already February.
I remember some people at the airport wearing masks when I was on my way back. Like Becca was talking to me about it, like somewhat scared already. Like that weekend. And I mean, absolutely, there were people who had COVID, like in Canada and in the United States at that point, like for sure. It's
just, I think the weekend before All-Star, there were reported cases in Chicago, and it's weird looking back now, but that was at the time where, like, even if there was five cases in the city, that was just like a new thing. I definitely remember, I think my mom told me to wear a mask on the plane. I obviously didn't listen. But yeah,
listen to
it's
mom.
Just crazy. It's only been 5 months. And I remember Adam Silver doing his annual press conference at All-Star Weekend in just this absolutely packed room. I don't know if you were in there for that. And I'm just thinking about, you know, that packed room now.
I was in the media room transcribing.
Again, smart. And Adam was asked about the, you know, coronavirus situation. And he talked about how they were monitoring it with their partners in China and things like that. It's just funny, not funny, but it's crazy to think about, you know, where we are now, 5 months later. The intros. Okay. So common. So Magic Johnson, comes out pregame, you know, they have a whole speech for Kobe Bryant and David Stern as well. And then there's an 8 second moment of silence for Kobe. Jennifer Hudson performs. And then Common takes over. He does this spoken word rap about the history of, you know, basketball in Chicago. And then he gets into his rap intros. First of all, I feel like if this All-Star Weekend was 5 years ago, it would have been Kanye's weekend, right?
Absolutely. Do you remember Wendy's tweet?
Oh, is it because they spotted a mic with Kanye's name on it? Is that what you're talking
yeah.
about?
Yeah. Yeah, and okay. I think Kanye was spelled wrong on the, like.
And that's like, why he didn't come out at halftime with Chance?
Well, I mean, I don't know why he didn't. The whole thing seems like, in retrospect, maybe it was just like a prank. But there was absolutely a moment where, like, we all thought he was going to emerge, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, so he did sit courtside, you know, with Kim during the game. But anyway, so Common does the rap intros. So I'm sitting in a section on Media Row, which is behind the stage. So I was actually really excited because I had a direct view to the teleprompter that Common was reading off of.
Yeah.
So I felt like Woj in that I saw all of his raps 3 seconds before he rapped them. But watching back, honestly, so I have some favorites. I don't know if you have some favorites. You have any observations and thoughts on this before I give you my four favorites?
One of my favorite things watching it back, because like from my vantage point, like I was like behind too, like kind of on the side and behind, like I was trying to take it all in, but it's not like I was just watching the screen the entire time and seeing how individual people were reacting. But like when you watch, it's like some people were completely stone faced, but certain people, Giannis, for example, was definitely one. Frank Vogel, was one. Russell Westbrook, they just like cracked up, like they could not contain themselves when Common delivered some like ridiculous rhyme to introduce them. And like those were my favorites, although it was kind of funny watching some people like really try to be serious and keep a straight face as well.
Yeah, so the first person that Common introduces is Nick Nurse, and it's a pretty basic rap, but then like out of nowhere Common just goes word after he introduces Nick, which I'm not sure why, it just cracked me up because the TV screen is like panned in on Nick, just like not knowing what's going on. Although, you know, both musicians, Common and Nick. Okay, so my four favorites.
Do you think they've talked about maybe collaborating in any way?
Yeah, it's like Common featuring the Arkells and Nick Nurse. Oh, can you imagine?
Man. That's a like nightmare trio, but. I think just putting Nick and Common together in a room, like I'd be interested to hear what would come out of that.
Yeah, Nick and
even if they were just talking, honest. like they don't have to make anything. I just think it's a funny duo.
Yeah, Nick just you know, running through his career coaching the Manchester Giants, and Common telling Nick about when he was on AMC's Hell's on Wheels. One of my favorites, number four, is Frank Vogel, just because Common refers to him as a mogul just to make it rap. He says, hold on. He says, making his second All-Star appearance, he runs the team like a mogul. From the Los Angeles Lakers, the coach, Frank Vogel. First of all, when has anybody looked at Frank Vogel and said, this guy is running the team like a mogul?
Never, because he doesn't. That's not what he does. He's a good coach, but there's nothing mogul-like about him.
He was their fourth choice last summer, to be fair.
Are there any coaches you would say run their team like a mogul? Maybe Doc?
Pop, you think? Maybe, kind of. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But, like, certainly, like, Frank Vogel is, like, the antithesis of that. But right. I loved the rhyme. It's also, like, when you're thinking about rhymes for Vogel, like, mogul is definitely the best. Like, it's the best you can do. It just doesn't happen to, like, fit the situation whatsoever.
I don't know. This one just cracked me up just because of how off base it was. The next one is him rapping Refusal with Antetokounmpo. Which honestly is just, it's just talent. Like, that's just skill. Like, that's just raw skill. Like, I was really amazed.
That one and the Bam Adebayo one where he said, making his All-Star debut, going hard in the paint is a style from Miami Heat, Bam Adebayo.
He says style.
Style. Like, I think those two were kind of in the same genre. They have a similar flavor where he's just sort of like tweaking words so they almost sound like rhymes when they're clearly not. So those I loved both of those.
Yeah, so the Bam Adebayo one is number one on my list.
Over Gobert.
Yeah, so Gobert's number two. We'll get to that. So Bam's was making his All-Star debut, going hard in the paint is his style. From the Bio. Miami Heat, Bam Adebayo, which, you know, Common just wanted to make sure you knew that he was rhyming those two words, that, yeah. You know, he was on point with that. The Rudy Gobert one, honestly, was definitely in contention for number one. Think you can shake this first time All-Star, au contraire, mon frère. From the Utah Jazz, the Stifle Tower, Rudy Gobert.
Come on, that's number one.
Now that I think about it, you know what? I'll revise my rankings. I'm easily influenced. He could have taken the easy way out and just rhymed it with like bear, care, like very easy words, but he went for it with this one.
It's honestly art. It's a perfect introduction.
This man said on the contrary, my friend, in French, to rhyme with Gobert, which. Yeah, okay, yeah. No, this should be a clear-cut number one. I don't know what I was doing with my original rankings. Apologies to Common and Rudy Gobert.
I feel like he might have, like, if he were struggling at the beginning, like, I don't know if I can really pull this off. Like, can I really make one for all of these guys? Like, as soon as he came up with the Gobert one, he would have just been like, well, I have no choice now. Like, I have to do this, and I can't just do it for him. So, like, that, to me, if he were struggling at the end with, like, Kawhi Leonard or... What was some of the other bad ones? Like, the Domantas Sabonis one is pretty bad. Like, if he was, like, trying to figure out something, I feel like he'd be like, well, I can't let the world not hear this Gobert one, so I'm just going to have to get through this.
I think it was clear cut that he probably, when he sat down to do this, and assuming that, you know, he didn't have input, from anyone else, like, he clearly had, like, five or six that were just top-notch. And you could tell some of the other players, like, it was just throwaway for him, right? Like, he wasn't really trying for, like, Kyle Lowry or, like, Pascal Siakam.
He's a two-time All-Star, so you'll know he'll get it done. From the Milwaukee Bucks, give it up for Chris Middleton.
I almost put that on there because it was so basic that it was great.
Middleton is just awesome. Like, I feel like we should all just call him Chris Middleton from now on. We should have been doing this for the last 5 months.
Do you have all of them with you?
I've like got them all in front of me. Yeah.
Can you tell me the Kyle Lowry one?
Yeah, the Lowry one. I mean, this one.
Just read it and then defend it.
Here from the champion Toronto Raptors, and you know they did it proudly. Six-time All-Star and court commander Kyle Lowry.
Like, that's court fine. He should have called Kyle a mogul too.
I mean, Yeah, I guess that makes as much sense as Frank Vogel being a mogul. Kyle Lowry's like the one guy on the Raptors that doesn't have his own clothing brand, right? So I don't know if you can call him a mogul.
Yeah, that's true. Can we start a thing where we turn Frank Vogel into Frank Mogul? Because I just think it's hilarious.
Absolutely. Consider it done.
Oh my god, this is amazing.
Did you notice when he introduced Siakam and Lowry, Nick Nurse made a point of applauding like vigorously, but like for the rest of the team, he just kind of stood there.
No, I did not. But you know, kudos to Nick, always sticking up for his guys and playing Kemba Walker 55 minutes in this game.
Kemba Walker's still hurt. Months later, he is still hurt. It's crazy. I thought he'd be fine.
All jokes aside, it does suck that he still has the lingering knee issues. All right, so somehow we've spent an hour trying to get into this All-Star game and only talked about the bean, deep dish pizza, Chicago-style hot dog, and Commons wraps. So we'll be back tomorrow with part two.